Now, one of the things that impresses one when it goes to an IMAX movie is the sound. Absolutely incredible sound, along with the music, but the sound effects sound so realistic. Now, Steve Saunders, who manages the managed the spacecraft that mapped Venus, that was the Magellan spacecraft, once told me that the IMAX cameras are so noisy that all the dialogue had to be dubbed in afterwards. And yet, as I said, these sounds are so realistic and natural. So how do you achieve that?
We achieve it in several different stages. You're quite right. The cameras are very noisy, and the IMAX 3D camera is no exception to that. So we ask the crews, no matter what, when you're shooting a scene of your comrades doing anything, please to shoot a guide track. And that will tell us at least what is said. Because when we first flew the cameras, they didn't do that. And in Dream is Alive, we spent hours and hours and hours on the sound stage with Ben Burtt, you know, the Academy Award-winning sound person who did all the Star Wars sounds. He was our sound audio trainer at that point. We spent hours with a lip reader trying to figure out exactly what the astronauts had said in the shot so we could post-sync it with them. And that is not an effective way to work at all. So we have subsequently trained all crews to try and get a guide track. It doesn't matter how noisy it is, as long as you can hear what the words are, then you have a reference for replacing. And in some cases, we've actually managed to replace the dialogue with the real astronaut's voice later, if they have time to do it. We do that. Then we also train them as part of their audio training to record sound effects. So at a time when it's the opposite, it's when the camera isn't running, we train them that, in fact, people are very interested in the discrete sounds that are around. I mean, if you just hold a microphone in the shuttle flight deck, a stereo pair of microphones is almost as effective as a picture in terms of being there, because it's a relatively small space, but there's so much directional different sound going on in terms of little fans and air to ground, and there's sound all around you, and you really feel transported as if you're right inside there. So we encourage them to record a lot of that atmosphere. Also, milestones, every EVA from beginning to end, that always yields a lot of interesting dialogue and the feeling that you're right there in the midst of the action.
And what about the shuttle launches? They, the whole theater shakes when they take off. Are these recreated or are they actual recordings of the launch?
Oh, no, these are actual recordings of the launch. We've built up over we've done five films in space now, and we've built up a wonderful library of recordings from every conceivable angle. And so, you know, to a sound editor, no piece of sound is ever thrown away. You know, you tend to recycle things and combine them, and so we've got every possible aspect. And when you see the Space Station 3D, you'll see a launch from an entirely different perspective.
And where do you get the cameras? I mean, how do you get the cameras there? Obviously, no humans allowed within QE of a launch site, and yet you've got shots and some of the films where you're right there beside the launch pad, sometimes on the launch tower. Do you use robotic cameras or remote control? And then if you do so, how do you cope with a launch delay?
Yes, the launch delays are something that you just build into all of your planning. You just assume that it will not launch on time. You have to build that contingency into your plan. But we shoot launches with a variety of camera positions, depending on what we're after. Most commonly, we use a blast box. That it goes around the camera, that in Space Station 3D, for the shuttle launch in that, we are about 58 meters from the base of the shuttle. We're right on the pad. The blast box is drilled into the concrete of the pad, and it is actually for that one, we used the original non-space cameras. These are the 3D Solito two-strip big camera. And the only housing we have for that, in terms of the blast box, is the underwater housing, which is made of very, very, very thick steel. And that's drilled into the pad. And then at the Kennedy Space Center, they are equipped to give you a hard wire start. And so you can work with the people at KSC there to program your start, which is done remotely from another facility. So you can't just film it launch starting at the time of the blast. You need to start the shot at least a minute before so that you can set it up in the film. You know, you're looking at the actual bird on the pad for some time before it actually ignites. So that's always been a tough thing to explain to people because, you know, some cameras are started by a noise reactor. And that's often how they do it in Baikonur, at the Russian spaceport. And we did, that was a real adventure going to shoot the Proton launch, which you, again, when you see the film, this will all make sense. But we had to haul our blast box to Kazakhstan with 1,500 meters of telephone wire, because they do not have the facility to provide you a wire and a remote start. And if you don't need it in Kazakhstan, I mean, if you don't have it with you, you don't need it. There is no department store to run to if you don't have a particular piece of equipment. So we went with our blast box. We even took empty sandbags and a shovel. That's you need to absolutely do it all. And the launch bunker in Kazakhstan is about 800 meters from the pad. So we ran this telephone wire from the blast box over railway tracks, roads, into the launch bunker, and they were very cooperative and let us have a person in there to actually press the start for us. And we got the shot. But when you go to see Space Station 3D, you'll see that something very unique happened in that shot. And I shouldn't tell you what it is.
Oh, gosh, we're going to have to wait, are we?
Yes, you will.
Okay, then. Now, how much training do the astronauts get in cinematography? Because in the film, it just looks like it's done by Steven Spielberg or some other professional cinematographer. How do they get much training in that?
We train each crew, and we trained 9 different crews for Space Station 3D, and we train each crew an average of 22 to 24 hours, but spread over a 6 to 8 month period. A lot of what they do is proficiency oriented. Learning to load and unload a camera is very much like practicing scales on a piano. The more you do it, the more comfortable you get with it, and the better, faster you get at it. Once they become proficient in the loading and unloading, of course, on orbit, they have to, every time a full roll of film is exposed, they have to unload it in a black bag. They can't see what they're doing, just the way it's done on Earth. And so once they become proficient in that, then we give them lighting training, exposure. I talk to them about framing, composition, what makes a good shot, what doesn't make a good shot. And all of this, throughout all of these classes, we're massaging the scene list and changing it to improve it. And then the moment of truth comes when we give them a roll of raw footage, and we take them to the mock-ups at the Johnson Space Center, and they have to shoot that roll. They have to put up their own lights. They have to choose their exposure. They have to direct their crewmates and do everything that they would have to do on orbit to make a scene. And that roll contains about enough footage for about 3 different setups, and then we process that in at the lab in LA and put it up 6 stories high in the 3D theater closest to the Johnson Space Center and critique it with them. And that is the moment of truth, because in 3D particularly, there's hardly any depth of field. They have to have that exposure and that focus absolutely dead on, because you really see it if it's not. And mostly it's all perfect, because they are the best learners in the world. That's why they're astronauts.
That sounds a bit like the training that oceanographers were giving to astronauts. And for years, oceanographers, you know, like Paul Scully Power, an Australian-born astronaut, well, he became one, taught astronauts how to take photos of ocean circulation. And eventually NASA said, in effect, go up and take your own photos of the ocean. And so Paul made history by becoming Australia's first Australian-born astronaut or person to go into space. Is there any chance that NASA will do the same to you or some of your workers and give you a ride into space?
Well, I should begin by answering that we flew with Paul. We flew with Paul on, I think it was 41G was his flight, and that was a real delight. And to answer the second part of your question, I think as far as I'm concerned, there's probably no percent chance. But I think that as you've been reading, the climate is changing. I think that in the coming years you will see more civilians flying in space. It's inevitable. I think the first person you're going to see NASA fly is Barbara Morgan, the teacher, who was back up to Krista McAuliffe. She has since joined the astronaut corps and gone through the standard training that any astronaut receives, and they are very confident about flying her, and she is very eager to go, and I think that that will open the door for many other people from different walks of life. I think it wouldn't be me that went anyway. I think that I would probably send a cinematographer, but I think that as the space station expands and there's more of a chance for civilians to go, you'll see lots of different interpreters go there.
What has been the reaction of the astronauts when they see your finished films?
I'm happy to report that the reaction from all the crews that we trained and the other astronauts who have seen it has been absolutely overwhelming. It's just the highest compliment that anybody of them could pay to me would be to say, which they have frequently, thank you for taking me back to space station. And what they mean by that is that you is what you feel with the 3D. You feel that you're absolutely in the space station, part of the crew, flying along in zero gravity, outside in the cargo bay, working alongside the spacewalkers. It's and I had Jeff Hoffman, who's never been to space station in Europe, thank me for taking him back to space. He's a retired astronaut and also an astronomer. And he said, I never thought I would go back to space again, and now I have. So,
and we can all share in that experience then.
I hope so, because I must say, we thought before we started this project that it might be a good marriage, the 3D, but none of us had any idea how effective it would be.
How do audiences respond to IMAX in general and to the space movies in particular?
I'm sorry, I didn't
hear that. How do the audiences respond to IMAX, you know, in general and in particular to the space movies?
Well, I think, as I mentioned before, the one of the primary things about the wonderful, big, clear, sharp picture that IMAX gives for an audience, and the fact that you're in highly raked seats looking into the center of the picture, allows you to be immersed in it. And I think that the reaction that you get is one of delight, just as if you were taking somebody flying, if you were taking them scuba diving. It's really like being there, and the 3D, of course, enhances that by orders of magnitude.
And you're doing some outreach activities in Washington, I believe.
We do. One of the most important things about making a film such as Space Station 3D is that you reach the next generation of space explorers. And I'm happy to report that The film, in just 5 weeks of release in North America, has had an overwhelming response from educators and school groups that are coming to see the film. The estimates are now that 2 million school kids will have seen it by the end of this year alone. And that's really important to us because I think that very few people have, apart from the classroom, I suppose, but even with that, very few people have any idea of what an enormously challenging task it is to build a space station on orbit and what has been actually going on above us for the last 2 years. I think television just does not seem to convey this in the same way that IMAX 3D does. That's primarily because we've gotten used to seeing reports from every space shuttle mission where you have a crew lined up in the flight deck of the space shuttle answering questions. That doesn't tell you what space is like. Even though they're answering the questions, it doesn't give you that experience. And that's what this film does. And I think that one of the nicest things I ever heard was prior to her launch, Susan Helms, who was a member of the Expedition 2 crew, the second crew to live there for a four-month stay, she went on the Today Show in New York just prior to her launch, and they asked her, what inspired you to become an astronaut? And to our astonishment, she said, I saw the IMAX film, The Dream is Alive, when I was a kid. And when I saw that, I wanted to be an astronaut. And that is what it's all about. If we can inspire the next generation of space explorers in some way from seeing this film, then we'll have done our job and NASA will have done its job, because that's why we're here, to tell people about the activities on orbit.